those teachings the way he represented them so beautifully from his own spiritual master. Tonight I will be speaking on a very important subject, especially for persons who are householders. And the subject will be one of how to gain Krishna's absolute protection and how to free yourselves completely of any and all worries by putting the worries on Krishna's shoulders. Since he's all-powerful, he can pretty much handle your worries. Since he's handling so many universes, those worries, and not even worrying. So, I'll be speaking from Bhagavad Gita, 18th chapter, 57th verse. Do you have any more books? If you want to read along with me, we do have... it'd be nice if each of us has a book so that we can read the verse together. What's happening here?
Recording.
Oh, okay. Is this a YouTube record? YouTube?
Just audio.
Oh, just audio.
Audio, yeah.
Okay. Wonderful. So to begin with, we can chant the Radha Madhava prayers. How many of us here are familiar with that prayer, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari? One, two, three. Okay, most of you. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 We'll be reading from the Bhagavad Gita, 18th chapter, 57th text. And in this book, it's 742. So we can all... We all have it? 742? It's text number 57 of the 18th chapter. Okay, so I will chant the Sanskrit verse. We can chant them in response or responsively. Chetasa sarva karmani.
Chetasa sarva karmani.
Mai sanyasya matpara.
Mai sanyasya matpara.
Buddhi yogam upashritya.
Buddhi yogam upashritya.
Machchita satatam bhava.
Machchita satatam bhava.
Chetasa sarva karmani.
Chetasa sarva karmani.
Mai sanyasya matpara.
Mai sanyasya matpara.
Buddhi yogam upashritya.
Buddhi yogam upashritya.
Machchita satatam bhava.
Machchita satatam bhava.
Chetasa sarva karmani. Chetasa sarva karmani.
Chetasa sarva karmani.
Mai sanyasya matpara.
Mai sanyasya matpara.
Buddhi yogam upashritya.
Buddhi yogam upashritya.
Machchita satatam bhava.
Machchita satatam bhava.
Yes, Nityananda Prabhu, would you like to chant?
Chetasa sarva karmani.
Chetasa sarva karmani.
Mai sanyasya matparaha.
Mai sanyasya matparaha.
Buddhi yogam upashitya.
Buddhi yogam upashitya.
Machchitta satatam bhava.
Machchitta satatam bhava.
Who would be like to know next? We can start from this side and work around. Yeah.
Chetasa sarva karmani.
Chetasa sarva karmani.
Mai sanyasya matparaha.
Mai sanyasya matparaha.
Buddhi yogam uprashitya.
Buddhi yogam uprashitya.
Machchita satatam bhava.
Machchita satatam bhava.
Chetasya sarva karmani.
Chetasya sarva karmani.
Mai sanyasya mat paraha.
Mai sanyasya mat paraha.
Buddhi yogam upashritya.
Buddhi yogam upashritya.
Machitta satatam bhava.
Machitta satatam bhava.
Okay, then we can now, I will say the translation. Krishna says, he's speaking to Arjuna, we know. How many of us here have read the entire Bhagavad Gita at least once? Anybody here? Anybody? Two? Three? Okay, and how many have read maybe half of it? Yeah, half? Okay, and maybe a quarter of it? Okay, so I think we're all familiar with Bhagavad Gita, then that's good. Because it's important for me to know just to what extent, to how deep I should go into the explanations. And since you're familiar with the Bhagavad Gita, and probably some of you have learned it since you were very young in your family home, did they chant it? No, not in your home. Anybody here? No? Oh, that's why you're here. You had to come to America to become good Hindus. A little ironic, but that's what the Prabhupada wanted. He said, actually, the word Hindu is, I mean, that's a general use of the word, but we're Vaishnavas, that's what our real name is, which is one who worships and glorifies and honors Lord Vishnu. He is our life and soul, he is our everything, our all in all. So, now, in all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. Please repeat. In all activities.
In all activities.
Just depend upon me.
Just depend upon me.
And work always.
And work always.
Under my protection.
Under my protection.
In such devotional service.
In such devotional service.
Be fully conscious of me.
Be fully conscious of me.
Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. My neck's a little stiff, so please forgive me. When one acts in Krishna consciousness... No, you don't have to repeat this, because just listen attentively. And when one acts in Krishna consciousness, he does not act as the master of the world. Just like a servant, one should act fully under the direction of the Supreme Lord. A servant has no individual independence. He acts only on the order of the master. A servant acting on behalf of the Supreme Master is unaffected by profit and loss. That's because a servant doesn't own anything. A servant simply serves the owner. And Krishna is the supreme owner. Therefore, why I should worry about profit and loss? I may have to strive to achieve a profit, but I don't have to worry about it. Because whatever I'm going to collect, whether it be a little bit or whether it be a lot, it's not going to go to me. It's going to go to the master. Similarly, in a bank, you give your money to the bank teller, you know, at the window. So she's not worrying about how much money comes in for the day. She just has to be sure that she counts it correctly and so that none of it goes into her or his pocket. Otherwise, there will be a discrepancy in the totals and the bank deposit slips or the bank withdrawal slips. So the job of the servant is to serve as accurately, as devotedly, as lovingly as one possibly can and leave the results to the managers. And the ultimate manager, of course, is Krishna. So all of us are the servants of Krishna. That's what Srila Prabhupada is saying. We need to think of ourselves as servants, and as soon as you're a servant, there's no worry. But as soon as you become the master, the controller, the proprietor, then you worry. Is it going to go on? So, but even for a devotee, when he becomes a proprietor, he never thinks of himself as a proprietor. He's still a servant, because Krishna is the supreme proprietor. You see, once we get that solidly fixed and focused and centered in our mind, we are not the proprietor. That's a very important principle. Okay, so let me go on now. A servant acting on behalf of the Supreme Master, is unaffected by profit and loss. He simply discharges his duty faithfully in terms of the order of the Lord. Now, one may argue that Arjuna was acting under the personal direction of Krishna. But when Krishna is not present, how should one act? If one acts according to the direction of Krishna in this book, as well as under the guidance of the representative of Krishna, then the result will be the same. That's an interesting point. Sometimes people raise this argument. Well, Arjuna, he had Krishna right in front of him, so how could he not become God-realized? You also have Krishna in front of you. Prabhupada has just said, this book is non-different from Krishna. The words of Krishna are all here. Does anybody doubt this? If you do, no problem. Eventually you'll come around. Faith sometimes takes a while to develop. We know that. So Arjuna, he heard the instructions, and he heard them with faith. He heard them with submission. He heard them in a mood of surrender. And so he understood, because at the very end of the book, Krishna says to Arjuna, have you heard this with an attentive mind? Are your ignorance and illusions now dispelled? And what did Arjuna say? He said, yes. My illusion is now gone. I have regained my memory by your mercy. I am firm and free from doubt and am prepared to act according to your instructions. So, when we read this book, and we read it with faith, we read it with love, with devotion and appreciation, then Krishna from within the heart, the Chaitya Guru, the Paramatma, he will see that you are reading this not merely as a like a worldly lesson as you go to a college or university or you go to elementary school and you take out your books and you read your lessons, but you don't, we need to have no talking in the background when I'm speaking because it distracts me and therefore I generally stop if there's any talking. If there's also another thing, if the children start to talk or make noise, then I would have to beg you to please take them out of the room for the benefit of everyone because I cannot maintain a concentrated mind. As long as they stay quiet, they can stay here. I have no problem. I love all the children and I love that they should hear Bhagavad Gita because they're getting the proper training. But sometimes because we know they're children. And children are children unless you give them puzzles to play with or little computer games to work. they get a little bit distracted and they get tired. They get diverted and they want to start speaking out. So it's a rule Prabhupada established whenever children would start. He said, kindly take the children out of the room. So we'll do our very best. And I hope these wonderful, blessed children will be able to maintain mauna, with the sages maintain a complete silence, at least out of respect. If they can do that, they get a gold star at the end of tonight. I don't have any gold stars with me, but I'm sure you Matajis can provide a few when they go out and buy some gold stars when they come home from school, or if they don't go to school, just put a little gold star right on their forehead just to let them know that they did so well in keeping mauna. Okay? So, continuing where I left off. So this is perfect Krishna consciousness, following the instructions in this book. Those are the same instructions given to Arjuna. One should, however, note that after doing something whimsically, he should not offer the result to the Supreme Lord. That sort of duty is not in the devotional service of Krishna consciousness. So what does that mean? He said, don't do something whimsical. For example, you want to give a nice hefty donation to the temple, and the temple is just made a plea that it needs $50,000. It wants to build a new wing, or it wants to build another level, and so it needs at least $50,000. And the money is not coming in the way we would like it to come in. So somebody gets it into his head that, well, it's Halloween, and I've got a Halloween mask, so why don't I just put on my mask now and I go to the Chase Bank down the block and I buy my child, he has a nice little water gun, a water pistol, and I'll just hold up the bank. And then maybe I'll get $10,000 from this Chase, and then we can go to Bank of America to get another $20,000. And you go to Wells Fargo, get some from them, and before the night is over, yeah, you just put it in. You don't even, well, of course, if you're proud, then you'll say, given by such and such, Mr. S.N. Gupta, or Mr. so forth. Or if you just want to keep it quiet, anonymously, and so forth. So that kind of giving is not ideal, because especially when you ask the teller, you give a little note. You have a mask on, of course, so they won't recognize you or know you. And please deposit all your cash from your jaw into this bag, please. And when she takes the last bill out, he doesn't know, because he hasn't watched enough TV, because that's where you learn about what all the criminals do and how they do it. So he hasn't been watching TV very much, because he's trying to become a devotee. So what happens is that the last bill is specially electronically marked in such a way that it sends off a signal to the police department. The police department knows exactly which bank is being robbed at that moment. And that police department is only a few blocks away. So when he gets all the money in and he says, well, I've made a killing today and I'm going to the temple, they're going to get that extra wing and I'm the one who's to do it. So he goes out and he's just about to get into his car and there's the sirens, the police. They're there and he's looking. Before he knows it, he's surrounded. How did this happen? And he doesn't know it. But of course, when he goes back to, when he falls down and goes back to watching TV, he finds out the secret that one of the bills was marked with an electronic signal. And they have many different ways of doing this. So Srila Prabhupada mentions in his purport, don't do that. If you want to give money, just pray to Krishna. Please help the temple. Sometimes there's somebody who's in the congregation who has it in his heart and he has extra Lakshmi, doesn't know what to do with it. Should he give it to the Red Cross or give it to Goodwill or Hope or whatever? But in his heart, he hears that and something tugs at the heart, and so he then gives what is necessary. Krishna tells him from the heart. Krishna is in the heart and he says, you've got this extra money, give it away and get the merit. Get the merit of the pious activity of offering to the temple, because so many people will take the benefit of your offering. So he gets no question till the end. Okay, what was your?
It's the story where they asked the man who's selling the puffed rice, can you donate some puffed rice?
No, not now, Prabhuji. That's not the time for this kind of thing. It's an interruption, yes. So anyway, at the end, you're welcome to add these things that are fine. This is not a conversation. This is a talk. This is a devotional. It's a devotional presentation, and the purpose of it is to awaken the love of God in everyone. It's not like you tell your story, and it's not that kind of thing. In other words, it's not a clubhouse get together. Okay, this is a satsang. Satsang means to get together for the purpose of truth, and the mood has to be one of devotion, the one of sacredness. The mood, but that doesn't mean you can't laugh. That doesn't mean you can't be a human being. You can be, and I hope everybody will feel free to do so. Laugh as much as you want, cry if you want, and if you have a few tomatoes in your pocket and you want to throw them at me, I've learned how to bear them. I've gotten a few in my lifetime, you know. But I don't like the rotten type, okay? So, they smell too bad. So anyway, we're getting on to the point of this purport. What is most important is that we... is that whatever we do, we should do it not as something, as Prabhupada says, whimsical. It should be done devotionally. What would Krishna like? Would this please Krishna? This is what we always have to ask. And I've already given the example of the person, he has extra money, doesn't really know what to do with it, he wasn't sure about it, and the antaryami in the heart tells him, yes, go ahead and do that. And so he says, well, why not? Of course. And so Krishna is the one we go to. If you don't have it yourself, you don't have that amount of funding or money or bonds or stocks or whatever, then we pray to Krishna, yes, Krishna, please, it's such a beautiful temple. And as I mentioned, I don't know if any of you hear my class this morning? I glorified the temple as I never glorified any temple. The columns were so beautiful. And the archways and the ceiling, absolutely gorgeous. And the pictures and everything. I was just spellbound and stunned. And it's so beautiful. And the lighting is also perfect. It's subdued. You feel you can be with people and still feel that you're alone because of the softness of the lighting and the sense of solitude that you get. So therefore, we come in, you go into the temple, you feel like you're in God's home. This is God's home. And he's inviting us into his home. He's allowing us. He does not posting at the gate. No, you have your credit card. He's not asking you for your credit card to get in. He doesn't ask whether you have a Visa card or this card or that card. Like, you know, the Jaya and Vijaya, when the four Kumaras, they came to the gate. And they said, well, we don't know who you are, so we can't let you in. And there were seven gates. So the six gates, everybody unrecognized them. So somehow Krishna made some arrangement for those two gatekeepers, Jaya and Vijaya. They didn't recognize the four Kumaras. They said, well, how did you get up here? They said, what are you doing here? You don't know us? Four Kumaras are incarnations of knowledge, of Gyan. How could they not be known? They travel all over the solar system, giving knowledge here and there, from the highest planet down to still lower planets. So they got very angry. They got flushed, and they cursed those two. They said, you're acting just like an envious human being, like a karmi. So you go down where the karmis belong. You shouldn't be watching this gate here. After all, I come to see my Supreme Lord, and you're blocking my entrance. This was all an arrangement by Krishna. So my main point is this. The temple is beautiful. Its doors are open. And when you make a contribution to it, there's so much benefit which comes to everybody, you see. So getting on with the purport. So give whatever you can, but give it with your heart. If you give with your heart, giving with your heart means it means that you want or you wish or you desire that the temple should prosper, that the temple should fulfill its goals, that many people should be benefited and helped and through the temple's activities. So when you have this mentality, you see, Krishna hears it and he will do everything possible to enable it. If it's merely given casually, you know, you're going to take money, all right, here's a donation. You know, and you just throw it in the what do we call it? I forgot, what's the name of the donation box? Hunty box. So you throw it in, all right, I did my bit for the temple. Now, that's not the attitude. This is very indifferent. It's very, it's actually offensive even. Everything should be done with love. Everything should be done with the heart. My dear Lord, you have given me so much food and clothing and shelter and medicine and education and a beautiful husband or a beautiful wife and beautiful children. And you've given me a good working shower and a good working water system and a good working electrical system. All this is going on by your mercy. So I owe you so much, Lord. I never think about this, but now I'm thinking about this, how much I owe you. Generally, we have learned to take everything for granted. It's casual. It's indifferent. It's just, I deserve it. I'm worthy of it. This is ego. And it makes the false ego expand. It gets bigger and bigger. And what happens is that when somebody calls you down or somebody insults you or somebody doesn't treat you the way you expect to be treated, you become insulted and you become offensive. You become angry. And what does anger lead to? Hatred. And then hatred means people split apart. I don't want to look at your face anymore. Don't even walk on the same side of my street. Like that. And then you train if you have a dog, you train the dog. Whenever the dog person walks on your street, the dog starts barking. Get out here. And the dog can give him a piece of the cloth, and the dog smells it, he knows. He's got to bark loudly when that person comes up. The important point is this, is that everything should be done with care, with thought, with attention. I tell the same story wherever I go, because I see so much mechanical activity going on due to the influx of so many different mechanical technological advancements, and they're all good.
when they're used in the loving service of Krishna. But we get so hung up on them, we get so entangled by them, we get so absorbed in them that we forget that they are only and have only purpose and the only value is in serving Krishna's with our love. So the goal of life, the goal of Krishna consciousness is to develop higher and higher, deeper and deeper, more and more intense love for Krishna. When you have that, you feel His holy presence in your heart. And when you're feeling His holy presence in your heart, you're not hungering for happiness. You are automatically happy when Krishna smiles upon you, when He glances upon you, when He thinks about you, when He's appreciating what you're doing and how you're doing it with care, with attention, with devotion, with love, with concern, and not merely indifferently, mechanically, robotically, thoughtlessly. How many people make giving? All right, I did. Now I'm a good Hindu or I'm a good Vaishnava. I've given my $50. No, that's not the attitude. You're not a good anything. We're all sinners. Why are we sinners? Sinners because we're not thinking continuously of Krishna. What does Krishna say? Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Not partially, not half the day, not for 1 hour, but always thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer your obeisances. Worship me. Thus completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. So there it is. Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Krishna wants your whole attention. He wants your whole heart. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. You don't surrender if you give something and you don't. There's no surrender, there's no sense of appreciation. Well, Krishna's not going to accept your offering. He doesn't personally. It may go to the temple. For example, he says, for those who offer me with love and devotion, a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. But he doesn't say, for those who offer me whatever they offer me, a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water, mechanically, indifferently, robotically, thoughtlessly, I will accept it. He doesn't say that. That's not his philosophy. It has to be done with love, with affection, with care, with attention, with interest, with heart. And we all know the difference because I know I myself have given so many times, you know, just to do it to look religious, to look spiritual, to look like I'm a pious person. So I give something, and I make sure people are watching me when I'm giving, so that I know that I'm respected because of that. But over the years, you learn that what is that going to get me? So he thinks I'm pious, she thinks I'm religious, he thinks I'm this. So what if he thinks? What does Krishna think? If you're doing it simply for false prestige, it's going to get you nowhere except another birth in this material world. That's where we're going to come back, to do it again so that people can say, oh, he's so pious. Oh, she's so religious. Oh, he's so righteous. What good people. Is that all we want? What is the value of that? Nothing. Krishna, when Krishna says, oh, this devotee is trying so hard to become more devoted to me, that he's trying so hard to be sincere. He's trying to get rid of all of the hypocrisy, the pretension, phoniness, and he just wants to be a straightforward, heart-feeling, full devotee. Well, he welcomes you with open arms. And isn't that what we're here for? We're here to gain. Krishna is our Supreme Father. We were all little kids once, and like you see, the little child is being held by the mother, and the child feels so secure and comfortable. He's not even worried about where his next meal is coming from. He doesn't think about that because he's in the arms of a mother whom he knows is giving him comfort and security and love and affection. So when Krishna begins to feel your love and affection, as he says in the verse, the pure devotee is always within the core of my heart, and I am always in the heart of the pure devotee. The devotee does not know anything else but me, and I do not know anything else but him. So Krishna says, he's saying that if you don't know anything else but him, but give him your full attention, 100%, then that's all he's going to be thinking of you. And don't you know that when he thinks of you, when he concerns himself with you, when he pours out his heart to you, you're not going to feel the bliss, the peace, the strength, the joy, the satisfaction, the fulfillment, the security that every human being is searching for and never finding? You will have that security. It will be yours now and forever because Krishna is now and forever. And when he brings you into the now and the forever, there's nothing to worry about. It's like the world, as Prabhupada says so often, the world is kind of, you go to sleep at night, there's a dream, right? and you dream this, you're flying in the sky, or you're dreaming that you're getting a new computer, or you're dreaming that you're getting a new car with a nice USB. Speaking of USBs, I got a few on the table there of my entire collection of audiobooks. What was that? I thought maybe the USB were answering me. So, anyway, the important point is that Krishna wants to give you himself. He's calling us. He's saying, abandon all varieties of religion. You just surrender unto me. I will free you from all sinful reactions. Don't have fear. Just give yourself to me. Throw yourself at my feet. Consider my feet, or consider my life, the supreme life, to be your life and soul. And if you do that, Krishna says, then what I will do, I will make sure that you have security. I'll make sure that you have contentment. I'll make sure that you have peace. I'll make sure that you're protected. There may be some challenges. There may be some temptations he may throw in along the way just to test your faith, or to show you that you may not be as faithful as you may think you are, to show you that maybe you have some pride that still has to be destroyed, has to be knocked down because of the fact that Krishna does not like people who are proud, because proud people think they're as good as, if not better than Krishna, and really try to forget Krishna. Why do they forget Krishna? Because they want to be God. So many people, they flaunt their authority. You say something and maybe your pronunciation is just so fractionally off, but they want to feel that they're correcting you. They want to feel that they're more knowledgeable than you are. So they correct your pronunciation, or they find one little fault in your essay or your speech, just to make you feel that you're tiny and they're big, you see. Small, insignificant, petty types of things. But you will find that. The best way to deal with that is just understand the motivation and just ignore it. Don't argue with it, because you say, well, it's only... Let them have it. It doesn't take anything out of you to let somebody feel like he's God. There's no loss or diminution in your life. So if that's what he or she thrives on, you know, being a big shot, being falsely prestigious, fine, let him have it. When he comes back in the next life, he'll do the same thing all over again. You're going back home, back to Godhead, though. That's your destination. To live with Krishna, serve Krishna, glorify Krishna, honor Krishna, and play with Krishna as his own little friend. Okay, let's get on with the purport. That sort of duty, we talked about the bank robber, that sort of duty is not in the devotional service of Krishna consciousness. One should act according to the order of Krishna. That is a very important point. The order of Krishna comes through disciplic succession. Do we all know what disciplic succession is? Nod your head if you know. Everybody knows that it's like disciplic means it comes in succession. There's Srila Prabhupada and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, and then there was Gaurakishor Das Babaji, and then what's his name? Jagannath Das Babaji, and so forth. You go on in this book, they have the disciplic succession. And when we try to follow in the line, the most important thing is not so much the exact words, but the meaning behind it. And Prabhupada has often said that the purports are most important in my books, and that is simply because he emphasizes the meaning of what really devotional service and devotional love and devotional submission is. And if you know that, even if you can't read any Sanskrit or anything, you've accomplished quite a bit. If you become very, very attached to Krishna, that is a great accomplishment. I'll tell a little story from the Chaitanya Charitamrita if I can remember it, but I'd like to finish the purport here. One should act according to the order of Krishna. This is a very important point. That order of Krishna comes through disciplic succession from the bona fide spiritual master. Let me talk a little about for a moment what is a bona fide spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada defines it very nicely in the Nectar of instruction, if I can remember it well, he realizes he's an eternal servant of Krishna. He loses interest in everything except Krishna. That's his total absorption. He's always thinking of Krishna. He's always trying to figure out new or different ways in which he can promote the holy name of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. So he's always thinking of that. And he understands that his only business is to spread this Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. That's what... Now, such a person should be considered an Uttama Adhikari, and the advanced Uttama Adhikari should be considered or should be recognized as a bona fide spiritual master. That's the way Srila Prabhupada defines it in the book Nectar of Instruction. Many of you may have read it, or if you haven't read it, you can get the book at the temple, or if you don't have time to read, you can always listen to it. But we do have it, you know, in the audiobook form. So that's a very important point, to incorporate into our day more and more Krishna. So let me, because this term, bona fide spiritual master, there are many pretenders, there are many hypocrites. They put on the dress of a spiritual master, they take disciples, and they do the most horrible acts, which go completely contrary to the instructions and the injunctions of Lord Sri Krishna. Starting with smoking cigarettes, drinking alcohol, or drinking coffee all the time, gambling, going to Las Vegas every few weeks, and losing all what they have. They collect so many thousands of dollars from their foolish, idolatrous followers, then they go and throw it out on the lottery. And nobody knows this because they do it quietly, secretly. Unless somebody, one of the disciples, happened to be at Las Vegas, and he's going or she's going there to play the roulette wheel or the poker game, and says, "Oh, what are you doing here, Master?" He says, "Well, I'm just looking for new disciples." "In this place? In the gambling hall?" He says, "Well, you have to look for the lowest of the lowest." So that's what Jesus said. When Jesus Christ, when he would go into a tavern where everybody was drinking, and his disciples said, "Well, what are you going into this place for? Because you got a bunch of drunkards and they're talking all sorts of horrible things, you know, about lust and anger and greed and all kinds of mercenary things." So Jesus, he said very nicely, he says, "I've not come to deliver the pious, I've come to deliver the sinners." He said, and who isn't the sinner? I've already defined sinner as meaning if you're not thinking of Krishna 24 hours a day, then we're little. If you're thinking of him 23 and a half hours a day, then you're just a tiny sinner. But if you're thinking of him only maybe 10 minutes out of a whole day, well, maybe you're a big sinner. Because actually, why should I've already given reasons why we should think of Krishna? Because he's giving us so much. If someone is giving you so much, is it not proper? Is it not our debt to think of he or she who is helping us, guiding us, directing us, focusing us, and giving us what we need to become better, enlightened, ennobled human beings? Isn't that our business as conscientious or conscience-filled persons to feel a debt to one who is always caring for you? We all have had mothers and fathers, and if they've treated us nice, don't we like to do something nice for them, especially in their old age? Many people I know, they buy them a house. So like many people I know from India, they've come and they've done quite well due to the fact that they have good brain power. They work in computer companies like Amazon, you know, .com or IBM or some of these other companies. And they've earned a very high amount due to their good brain power. And many of them, with this money, they've purchased... first of all, they offered their parents opportunity if they would like to come to America. But generally, parents like to stay in India because they have their friends, they have their great-grandparents, and they have their... They're pretty well settled there. So then, can we at least get you a new house? A new house, they will accept that, you know? So they build them a beautiful house so that... Uncle can live there if he wants, aunt can live there, the nephews can live there. It's just one big, beautiful community in one large house. So why do we do this? We do it because we feel something affectionate, something something loving towards them. They've given us so much. We wouldn't have this, we feel, that if they hadn't lavished us with so much affection and love. And we see Americans, they're so mixed up in the brain. They don't know what's right from wrong. They're taking drugs, they're taking alcohol, they're doing all this kind of thing. But most of our parents, especially you come from pious, I assume that you come from pious families. Is it not where they taught you right from wrong? You look like it. So if they did, then you have them to be thankful for. So therefore, as a result, when you did your studies, you were able to concentrate without all the stray thoughts coming in of, you know, should I go and gamble, or should I go and should I be lustful, or should I drink, or should I... you're able to focus. Many persons I know from India who came from pious families, they're able to concentrate and focus and center their attention, and their brains just absorb it and they sop it up, and their memories are also very, very wonderful. Because they're not contaminated the way many Western kids are, many of whom have great brains, but what they do is they sully them, they dirty them, they filthy them as a result of drinking. They go on all these rave parties that they have, and they take drugs, they take heroin, and they take cocaine, and this ecstasy, and OxyContin, and all this kind of junk that they put into their system, and their good brains just become polluted. Prabhupada used to say, yeah, they put cow dung in their brains. And they don't get cured of anything. What happens is they when they were young, they showed IQs, some of them at 50, 150, 160, even higher. And then what happens by the time they graduate college, they're ready almost for the morgue, because many of them overdose on these terrible drugs they take. So you're all very fortunate. You've had parents who have cared for you and thought about you and given you the necessity. So don't you feel some debt towards them? Don't you feel you want to do something? That's natural. Why should we not feel that towards Krishna, our Supreme Father, our Supreme Mother? Or if you prefer to, when Krishna manifested himself in the female form, we have Srimati Radharani. If you like Sri, then you can thank her as your Divine Mother. You see, and you can thank Krishna as your Divine Father. And the feeling should be, he's giving me so much. Why should I not think about him? If somebody is always caring for me, thinking of me, doing things for me, I'm in debt. But we blot it out from our mind, and you know why? Because we came here, all of us, to be a lord. That's why we're here. To be a controller, to be a director, to be a dictator, to be a manager, to be a person who tells others to do things and then feels very much of a lord. Yes, put him to sleep with your loving caresses and kisses too. Mother Yashoda, she would do that. She would kiss Krishna's head, and then Krishna would go to sleep. And then, like the Damodar, she put him to sleep, and then she started to do some. Churning of the yogurt to turn it into butter, and that, you know what Damodar means? Dhamma means to put a rope around, and Dada means around the waist, to take a rope and put it around the waist. So what happened anyway? She went and she was doing that, and then she came back, and then she was feeding Krishna with her breast, and then Krishna was enjoying himself, and then the milk was boiling on the stove, so she put him down, and he got so angry, and he took this clay pot, and he smashed it against the pot where she was churning, and all the butter came running out. He was a naughty boy, so she had to punish him. She didn't like to do that, but she wanted him to grow up to be a good boy. She didn't want him to be like a criminal or someone who's disrespected or dishonored. I mean, it's rather humorous. You're laughing, and so am I, because actually, who is Krishna? Isn't he the source of all morality? Isn't he the source of all legality? Isn't he the source of all honor? He makes the laws. Manu gets them from him. So therefore, here she is trying to teach him how to be a good boy, when actually he's the one who's responsible for her understanding what a good boy and a bad boy is. It's rather humorous when you really think it through. So anyway, He goes running away when she goes chasing after him, and finally she catches him, and she has this stick, and he's here he is, the most powerful person in the universe, and he's shuddering over Mother Yashoda's with the stick, and she sees, oh, he's too frightened, I don't want him to grow up with some kind of a fear complex. So she takes the stick and throws it away. She says, you're a naughty boy, you're not going to have any fun today, I'm punishing you. And she ties him to that spice mortar, you know, and he's tied up. Well, she doesn't get him tied immediately, though. That's where the whole pastime comes in. She takes a big long rope and she ties it around the spice mortar, you know, in the center. It's like an hourglass. And then she tries to get the rope around Krishna's waist. It's long enough. It's 2 inches too short. And there's, wait a minute, what happened? She tells the maid, get another rope. So she gets another 10-foot rope, ties it around that end that he has, and tries to bring it to touch with the rope that was too short. And it shrinks. She says, I've never seen a shrinking rope. Who's doing this? What's happening? It's being done by some demons or demigods? What's happening? So we get another rope and another one. She ties it together. And so she's trying, and the perspiration is coming down her face. And she's sweating. You know, all the clothes are drenched. But she's not going to give up on making Krishna into a good boy and punishing him. She's going to get him tied, and he's not going to do anything for the day. Finally, after who knows how many ropes, 5, 6 ropes, Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and no one can bind him. He's unbindable, and he's immeasurable. He's as large as he wants to be or small as he wants to be. And he sees the devotional love that Mother Yashoda is pouring into this effort to get him bound up. So he sees that and feels that and wants to respond to it and reciprocate with it. And so what does he do? He allows her to tie him. And the way it plays out is so funny, because when he's watching her take the rope, she's expecting it to shrink, and she's getting it closer. And she gets a little closer. Only 1 inch away now, getting closer. Got it together. And she's trying to tie it. Is it going to shrink and go back? No. And what happened? And Krishna is looking as if, what is this mystery? What's going on here? As if he couldn't figure it out. As if he was just an innocent little child. And it's rather humorous to see this, how he's enjoying her love. And she's enjoying the beauty of his face. And when he finally, as I said, when he was running away, he had this collyrium, you know, that they put on the children's eyes, the mascara, and it's running down his faces, and she's looking at this beautiful, gorgeous, lovable face, so charming, so captivating, and she doesn't want to punish him because his face was so beautiful, it just softens her heart. And she feels such an effusion of love coming out. But she knows she must be a good mother. She must protect him. She must guide him. Same Nanda, he also has a problem too. You know, they love him, they don't want to punish him. So anyway, what happened was that then finally, as you know, how the story finally plays out, Krishna drags that mortar through the two twin Arjuna trees, pulls the trees down, out comes two demigods who were in thousands of years ago, they were offensive to Narada Muni because they see Krishna, and Krishna says, this is your last birth, and then they leave, and so forth. The important point is that Mother Yashoda was so caring, so thoughtful, so when we have our children, it should always be coming from our heart, not merely just to discipline, just to dictate, just to be a lord. But you are the manager of your child, no question about that. But everything has to be done with love. When I go to Portland, Dhananjaya, they're now in Texas, San Antonio. And one of the things I remember when she was Mataji, she was raising her children. At moments, she would just, her love and affection for those kids was great. But when they would get out of hand, when they would do something wrong, her voice would come out, who do you think you are, Lakshmi Devi herself? You know, when they were being a little conceited, you know, young girls are, playing with their hair and too much of this and that. And they said, who do you think you are? Why are you acting like this? Show some humility. Put your head down. I'm your parent. Look at you trying to parade before me as if I'm supposed to worship you and bow down at your feet. I admire this so much because she had a perfect balance. And then little Janavi, she wasn't little, then she loved her mother so much that even when she was 11 and 12 years old, she said, "Could you please feed me still?" She felt still like a little girl, you know. She says, "I love it when you feed me like that." So mother was affectionate. She says, "Yeah, of course. This doesn't take anything out of me." So this loving affection was there, but strong discipline was also there. So the kids never got to feel that their mother hated them, but was actually expressing her words to make them better human beings. They couldn't help but feel that. It wasn't chastisement for its own sake so that she could feel like a dictator or a manager or a controller. It was so that the kids would grow up well, and they are growing up so well. I was there last year. I'm going there in a few weeks. They look at me like their grandfather. They all want to give me a hug, a grandfather, like grandchildren. So I said, "Well, you know, I'm a brahmachari." She says, "No, you're a grandfather." You know, they talk like that. So I said, "Okay, I'll put my hands around your shoulder." And that everyone was fine with that. Anyway, the important point is that we must, don't get so much caught up in information, get more in devotion. If information without devotion is nothing more than false prestige. People walk around and they shoot out these verses, they know hundreds of them, one after another. But what is it going to get them? Do they know the meaning of this verse? Let me go back to the verse. I'm almost finished with the purport. I'll get into this point. Just the last two sentences. If one gets a bona fide spiritual master and acts according to his direction, then one's perfection of life and Krishna consciousness is guaranteed. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Ganandina Shalakaya Chakshur Unmanitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. So, coming back about showing off knowledge, there's a very wonderful story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita about a Brahmin. He's a Brahmin, but he's rather illiterate. He can hardly read. He can read a little bit, but he mispronounces the words. And his guru had given him the instruction that I want you to read through this Bhagavad Gita, the whole 18 chapters, all the Sanskrit, as best as you can. You do it every day. So that's what he would do. And some of the Brahmins, you know, these smarter Brahmins, they would see him doing it, and when he would be wrestling really with some of these words because he couldn't pronounce them properly, you know, they would all be laughing, you know, like ridiculing, like that. And he was, he didn't mind, he didn't care. He knew one thing, his guru had given him an instruction, and he was going to carry out that instruction, come hell or high water, come laughter, come ridicule, come condescension, or dishonor, whatever it would bring him, he didn't care. So he went through, that's what he would do. But as a result of following the instruction of his guru to the best of his ability, he began to actually see the picture of Krishna driving the chariot of Arjuna. But he didn't see him merely as a chariot driver. He saw him as the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality. He who is holding up the entire cosmos. He who is making it run. He who is maintaining it. He who is creating it. He who is dissolving it. The Supreme Power. And here he is taking the part of a mere measly charioteer. That's a low-leveled kshatriya. High level, of course, is the ones who shoot the arrows, who throw, you know, like Bhima and Arjuna, they are high-level kshatriyas. So Lord Chaitanya wandered into the temple, and he saw this man chanting, and he said, and he saw that the man had tears flowing down his cheeks, heavily, profusely. So Lord Chaitanya put a mild smile on his face, although these other Brahmins, they're still laughing, you know, with a smile of appreciation, not a smile of ridicule. And he says, he sits down with him and he says, "Why are you crying so heavily like this?" He says, "I can't understand it." He says, "What can't you understand?" He says that Lord Krishna, who is the king of this universe, of all universes. There are millions of, you look up the stars at night, there are millions of them. He set it all this into motion. And here he is playing the part of a mere charioteer for his friend and devotee and cousin, Arjuna. And the mercy that he is manifesting is so inconceivable that it just brings tears to my eyes. That one so high, so great, so amazing, so awesome, majestic, will act so humble, you know, so modest, so in such a way that he cares nothing about his position. So he says, that just wrenches my heart, and I cannot stop crying when I think about this. Lord Chaitanya says, you know, all those men back there, you know, who pronounce the Sanskrit all perfectly, and they know all this by heart, he said, and they're ridiculing you, he says, they know nothing. You have gotten the essence. You have gotten the true purport, the true understanding of Bhagavad Gita. You know that you are an insignificant, small, inconsiderable living entity, and that Krishna is great and grand and amazing and majestic and awesome, and that he is to be worshipped, glorified, honored, bowed down to, surrendered to. You know all this, and that's what God consciousness is about. Not only do you know it as an intellectual fact, but you know it as a realized experience. And that's what really helps and enables a person to go back home, back to Godhead. A true, deep, realized experience. And when Krishna gives us that, our life is peaceful, it's sublime, it's steady, it's concentrated, it's focused, and all you want to do is do nice things, good things, loving things for other human beings. Does anybody have any questions on this so far? Would you like to say what you want?
Yeah. The whimsical service.
What service?
The whimsical service. There was once a man.
Whimsical service?
Whimsical.
What does that mean?
Whimsical, you read from the purport.
Spell the word?
Whimsical.
Whimsical.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you said whimsical. That's the way it came out to my ears. I got old ears, so forgive me. So whimsical, go ahead. Yes, I'm sorry.
There was a man who was selling puffed rice. And the Brahmin comes and asks, can you donate to offer to Krishna? And he said, no, no, no. And then a big gust of wind came and blew it up all in the air. He said, Krishna Bhog, Krishna Bhog, as it flew in the air, like he was offering it after it's flying in the air.
After that, you're right, yeah. Interesting. Thank you. He didn't offer it, but Krishna took it away.
Yeah.
He had Lord Vayu just go do a number on him, and there it went. Anyone else? Thank you, Prabhuji. Anyone else have some points? Now, well, if you don't have a question, I'm going to ask a question, so beware. Yes, Mataji.
I have a question. When you said that 24 hours or the whole day you have to think about Krishna, but practically when we are in our lives, maybe studying or attending a lecture.
Right, yes.
Or if you are working, I mean, if you think practically, it's not possible to think of Krishna 24 hours. So I wanted to know the deep meaning behind that.
Okay.
I think there is something behind that. It does not mean the sentence that what you told.
It means it and it doesn't mean it. And I'll explain how it doesn't mean it and how ultimately it does mean it. And this is it. If you begin to incorporate Krishna more and more into your life, now let's just say for a whole day you maybe remembered him, maybe for an hour. How many are chanting Hare Krishna on the japa beads? Most of you are initiated? I see there's one of the spiritual masters behind my head, one of my good friends, Prakash?
Bhakti Prakash,
yeah. So anyway, the meaning behind it is this, is that even if, let's say, you're doing nothing, and then you do 5 minutes. So if you do that 5 minutes regularly, you develop a habit. And then that habit becomes a tendency. You don't feel right unless you are actually doing it at least 5 minutes. I've seen many people do just like this. So then after a while, that 5 minutes becomes easy. Now you add 5 more minutes. Now you're doing 10 minutes. Next year, you're doing 20 minutes. Okay. 3 years later, you're doing a half hour. So what is happening is you're developing a little more taste for it. You're developing, you want to do more, you're feeling more peaceful, you're feeling more joyful, it's getting easier, and you're feeling more, and you're starting to understand the Bhagavad Gita better, you're understanding the pastimes of Krishna better, and Krishna consciousness, or Krishna's life, is becoming more unfolded in your life. You're treating your child or your husband or your relatives in a way which before you were always arguing with them. Now there's hardly any arguments going on. So that's a great thing, especially in family life, because arguments are always like, no, do it this way. No, I'll do it this way. No, no, do it this way. No, but I want to. No, I. It never stops. It goes on and on. Unless one has to surrender. So when you learn how to surrender because you don't feel it's taking anything out of you, okay, so all right, you're right, we'll do it your way. And you still feel strong. You don't feel like you've been crushed by your mother-in-law, father-in-law, whatever, whoever is doing it. Main point is this, is as you go on, then 2 hours, now you want to do more. As you get older, the years go passing by. And your taste develops. It gets sweeter. There's a story in Nectar of Instruction about the person who gets yellow jaundice. Now, the cure for yellow jaundice, as we may know, is that sweet rock candy that they sell in India. They even sell it. They used to sell it here. I haven't seen it. So rock candy, when you take it, it's like almost 100% sweet. You take it, it's very useful and very beneficial for overcoming this yellow jaundice. How it does it, I don't know, but it does do it. Now, when you have yellow jaundice, your saliva tastes very bitter. It's a very bitter, terrible taste. You want to spit it out. What happens is that as the cure takes place, the bitterness in your mouth, that taste, gradually subsides and slowly is eradicated until finally you no longer have it, and the taste that you have in your mouth is the sweet taste which comes from the candy, or that it's called rock candy. That's what they call it. So you get that. And so similarly, when you start out chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, it just sounds like just so many sounds, and it doesn't have any spiritual attraction initially. But as we become purified, you see, just as the person, the disease elements, as they're overcome in the body, and the yellow jaundice disappears, what happens is that one regains his regular taste, his normal taste. Similarly, as we become more and more Krishna conscious, what happens, it becomes natural to us. Whereas originally, because we were so full of impurities, so full of lust and anger and greed and envy and pride and all these different things, it's kind of like a window which is clogged and cluttered with dust and you can't see outside. And somebody says to you, well, how does it look outside? It looks like it's nighttime, but it's actually daytime. But you can't see the day because it's so dark. And then when you start cleaning the windows, there it is. It's daytime. It's a bright, beautiful sunshine. So you can see that because you've taken the dirt off the glass. Similarly, as you take the dirt off your mind, the lust, anger, greed, and envy, you begin to see things from the point of view of the soul, you see. Not the covering over the soul, but the soul, which is pure in its inherent state. Soul is beautiful and it's pure. Only problem is it's because of the covering around it, the material covering, it's identifying itself with the physical body, and from the physical body it identifies itself with the connections of this physical body, your mother and your father and your home and your car, all those become an extension of you. Okay, so as you become more and more realized in God realization, you will want to spend more and more time. When I've gone to India, accidentally walked into an ashram. I didn't know it was a woman's ashram, okay? And I walked into it to think it was just some temple, and I saw there must have been about 60 women widows, all in white, and they were all chanting. They were there to spend the rest of their life. They would spend most of the days chanting, or they would do some service. And even while they were doing service, they were chanting. The name had become an indelible part, an an undisturbable part of their mental makeup. So they're always chanting, whether they're up, whether they're cooking, whether they're sitting together. So what happens is as you develop this taste, eventually it can become 100%. You can even dream the holy name. We dream of other things. We dream of things. We dream of cars. We dream of like Halloween monsters. We dream of the things we did at our jobs. We dream of our kids. We dream of problems. I used to have problem dreams that, like trying to figure out a mathematical problem was my worst subject. So I would have these math dreams, and I would say, no, you have to put this number here, put this number here, and it was tearing me apart. Finally, I woke up and free. So life is a long dream. Eventually we come to the realization that everything going on is just like your dream. And one day you leave this dream and you go on and you start another dream. That's what most people do. Or it's like going into a movie theater, one of those infinite plexes. You watch the 2-hour movie there, finally the movie is finished. You once were outside and it was very bright, beautiful sunshine. You got into the movie house, and when you got into the movie theater, you forgot there was a bright, beautiful sun out there. But you got so involved and entangled and absorbed in the show and in the picture and the actors and the actresses that finally, when the movie ended, you just want to see another movie. So you just got up and you went to the next one. There's a plex, you know, the 12 plexes, and you go to the next one and you go in there. You see another 2-hour movie. That's your life. Your 2-hour movie life is over. Then you go to plex number 3, number 6, number 9, number 10, and you stay in this dream just constantly, always entangled in the suspense of who's the winner, who will be the loser, because we identify ourselves with those characters. We see ourselves in them. So therefore, when they win, we win. When they lose, we lose. Of course, the movies today, when they have the happy ending and you're rooting for the main character, of course, you're always going to come out winning. So now you want to go through another movie so that you can win another game. But ultimately, you're the loser, 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 because you've totally forgotten the sunshine that's out there whence you came, or the eternal world from which we came. If you've forgotten that, then you stay in the dark movie house or the material world, the world of ignorance, on and on. For thousands and millions of years. Is it not? So that way, when you become Krishna conscious, somebody, you're sitting in the movie theater. I'll give you an example, Srila Prabhupada. You're sitting in the theater and Prabhupada comes in and you're so absorbed in that. And he says, by the way, it's a beautiful, bright day out there. And you say, out where? And he say, out there. Outside. What outside? Outside, where you originally were. What are you talking about? Let me tell you a little about it. Come with me. Let's go into the lounge. So he sits you down and then he tells you there's a bright, beautiful, spiritual, eternal world, and everyone loves one another. Loves? What do you mean, loves? And then he gets into what love is. People just love for the purpose of getting something. And when you don't have it, get it, then you hate. You know, if somebody takes it away, you hate. Is it not? So, therefore, finally, Srila Prabhupada takes you by the hand. It's a slow journey, but he gets you out into the big lobby, and then you see a little bit of light there. Hey, there's an outside. I had forgotten that. And he says, come on, let's go a little closer, and a little closer. Finally, he gets you out, and you're in the eternal world. And he says, what an imbecile, what an idiot, what a fool I was. I thought that the movie was real life. It was just like, it's a dream. And that's what all of life is. Finally you die, only to take another birth, only to get entangled again, involved again. Do we want that? Don't we want to go back home, back to Godhead, glorify Krishna, honor Krishna, serve Krishna, love Krishna, give our all to Krishna, and do things as a loving service to Krishna, and not have the, Vaikuntha means place of non-anxiety. Do we like anxiety? It's horrible. Well, you all remember when we were taking examinations in university and that those end terms came and you spent the night cramming and cramming, stuffing your head with all those horrible, useless, worthless facts about American history or Indian history and names that you had to memorize, which you were never going to have to think about again, but you had to get well, some of you want to become A students, so you made sure you knew who, and the anxiety, because sometimes you can have an anxiety attack during the examination. And what does that mean? You can't remember. Your mind goes blank. And then you start praying, oh God, Krishna, help me remember this. I remember, I said it 100 times. How many times do you see a person, you knew their name perfectly, you said it 1,000 times, and you can't remember his name. What do? I just say, Krishna, please, this has been the most embarrassing day in my life if I can't call him by his name. That happened to me just this morning. I won't tell you who. But it did happen to me this morning. Someone I knew very, very well, and I couldn't think of his name. I've called him many, many times. And it's embarrassing because it indicates maybe you don't even care for the person to learn and remember his name. I mean, we can all get away with it, say Mataji and Prabhu and all that. That gets you by, at least. Prabhu means master, and Mataji means respectful mother. So we can get by on that, and nobody's going to find fault with us. But in our own heart, we like to know to be able to remember these names. And actually, we should be... This is an easy way. You just pound it into your head, or you can see repeat it over and over, or link it to something that you already know or to someone you know, and it's easy to remember. But it happens, though, that you just forget something. So it's anxiety. Who wants anxiety? We want to go back to the place of placidity, where everything is peaceful and calm and quiet and full of rapture, full of ecstasy and chanting of Hare Krishna. So are there any more? Have I bored you enough or enlivened you enough? Does everybody know the basis? I'm going to go around and ask, if you don't want to answer, it's okay. I don't want to embarrass anybody. That's not my business in coming here. But what is let me put it in a general way. You can raise your hand. What is the essence of what I spoke about today? What am I encouraging everyone here to achieve? Raise your hand. Think about it for a few moments, because I talked about a lot of things. But there was would you know? You want to talk? Yeah. You have it? Yeah. Who wants to? You know?
Love of Krishna.
Yes, love of Krishna. And tell me a little about love. What are the when a person loves Krishna? What are some of the things that he feels to know that he truly loves Krishna? What are the things he feels to tell him that he loves Krishna? And love is just a word, but how do we equate that word with some feeling or with some action?
He's always thinking of Krishna, always seeing how he could serve Krishna.
Good. A little more. Come on. Keep talking.
It feels like an essential part of his life to be with Krishna.
Yeah. And why does he want to give so much to Krishna? Why Krishna?
Because Krishna has created all of us and he feels indebted because...
That's what the answer I was looking for. Thank you so much. We feel indebted. That's true. And that's what we should be feeling. Normally we don't, because we just think, well, it's just coming to us. Our pride, our ego, our arrogance, our pretension. So we want to be free of all that. And we want to... Very nice. You get an A plus on this one. Are you an A student in school?
Kind of.
What does kind of mean? He's being modest. He's probably an A plus, but he just doesn't want to come right out with it. Are you? You're an A student, aren't you?
Mainly,
of course. Yeah. And listen to how he's timidly... he doesn't want to boast and brag, which is such a nice quality. Your parents have raised you very well, and I compliment them for doing that. Yes, and continue. And you see how he absorbed... What is your age?
12.
He's 12, and we're all, 40, 50 or so. And look how his brain just sponged. I could get him to keep talking, because I'm just picking the brain, you see, making it... him tell all these things. He came out with this word, indebted. That's our key word. I'm indebted. And who are your parents? They've been given to you by whom?
Krishna.
Yeah, Krishna gave them to you. So he's your real father, and this father, who has been given by Krishna, you should give ultimate, highest respect, because, after all, he's the representative of Krishna. And so you should follow his orders, and you should behave yourself, and be a good boy like Mother Yashoda wanted her Krishna to be good. Okay. Anyone else like to talk about, say, what is your name?
Drew?
Like Dhruva? Yeah. So Drew, he got it all. So I don't know how. Yeah, everyone can go and take prasadam now based on what Drew said. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your assistance and your help. So are there any further, because I don't want to leave anyone in the lurch wondering, well, what about and what about and why didn't... You sure you don't have any questions now? Okay. So is it time for prasadam now? What? Who? Some? You have a... Oh, I'm sorry, Prabhuji.
It sounds very easy in theory, but then when you're practicing it, it's like a constant struggle.
It just
takes a moment, and then your mind, it just whisks you away, and then you kind of degrade yourself, and then suddenly you realize, oh, for the last one day, I've been kind of getting materialistic and trying to pull yourself back. It's so difficult to pull yourself back. So throughout your life, you're just keeping on fighting and fighting. And one thing you realize along the way is, even though when you look back, it looks like you've come a long way, when you look forward, you see how much longer it is than you thought away from Krishna. And it seems like almost insurmountable. So just asking for your comments on that.
Well, my comment is the same one that Krishna gives in this book here. He says, when Arjuna says the same thing, he says, what if a person even falls away somewhat? What happens to him? He's like a cloud which has been broken off from the main cloud. He's like a riven cloud. So Krishna says that person is never lost. He said, first of all, everything that he has learned, everything that he has acquired, every action he has performed in Krishna consciousness will never be lost. It will always be remembered by Super Soul in the heart. And he will be given in his next life, let us say he leaves without becoming fully Krishna conscious, which happens. But he's trying his best, and he has difficulties. There may be financial difficulties. There may be physical, bodily difficulties. There may be intellectual difficulties. So many difficulties can beset us. Nonetheless, he tries to do as best as he can. So Krishna never forgets the efforts that you make. He never forgets that. So he will give you in your next birth parents and an environment which will be conducive to further developing your spiritual life. So if you don't make it in one life, then you have another life. So when you have parents who are devotees, and they encourage you from the very beginning, and if they're devotees, and also they have enough money, that there's no money or financial problems, so you have more time, and you have more energy, and you also have more motivation. So if you don't make it in the one life, it may be in two, or three, or four, or five. In the understanding of Krishna, time is eternal. So this body is only here for a while, and then we get another one. You can be here in this world, or maybe in one of the higher planets. It doesn't matter. The main thing is you go on from where you left off. And as you mentioned so nicely, it is a struggle. But the struggle will be enjoyable when you do it as a love offering to Krishna. Krishna, it is so difficult. Nonetheless, how do we prove our love for someone? By bearing difficulties for them. You have a child, and the child gets ill, and you have to stay up all night with the child sometimes, getting up, he's crying. And but you don't complain to the child. Why did you have to get born? You don't say that to the child. It's a pleasure, it's a love. Because you love the child, then you will do everything you can, and therefore that love will turn the struggle and the difficulty into something pleasurable and welcome. When the love element is mainly present. When you're doing it because Krishna deserves it. He deserves our love. I already gave a whole bunch of reasons why he does deserve it. And this Prabhu Drew, he mentioned that we're already indebted to Krishna. So therefore when we welcome, I know some devotees, whenever they get something, even an illness, they welcome it. Oh, Krishna, not that they try to make it worse, that's not the idea. They try to make it better. But they accept the illness as having come from Krishna to show them that life in the material world has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And sometimes we forget that it does have an end. And consequently, our illness can remind us that it does have an end. And consequently, we then become more serious, more concentrated, more dedicated to taking this chanting more seriously, reading Prabhupada's books more, and doing the things which will help us become Krishna conscious. So the struggle is there, but we can make it pleasant by welcoming it as being given, God sent by Krishna, to bring us closer to Him faster. Okay? You got the idea? Does everybody understand this point? So don't grudge when you get some difficulty in your life. Welcome it. Turn it into an opportunity to grow and to develop and to rise and please Krishna as an expression of your love, to tackle it, to confront it, to deal with it. And if you're having difficulty, you pray to Krishna. My Lord, I mean, for example, I'm terrible when it comes to computers. I mean, just to even get me to where I am, it was. But whenever I have a problem, I usually say, Lord, I don't like to bother you with this kind of stuff. There, I mean, you're running this whole universe, and here I have this little stupid computer problem, which you could just solve in just a second. Or I have a problem with my, I did have a problem with my TV set. The only thing I watch TV for is the news, just to find out what's happening, because sometimes in my talks, I like to utilize some of the news events to show you the reflection of how Tamaguna is working, Raja Yuguna, Sattva Guna is working in different ways. Through and people who are watching the news, such as householders like yourself, probably you do watch maybe 6:30 news or so, or 7, maybe you do, you don't, but I know many do. So my VCR, believe it or not, although I do have an arrangement, I have a brand new TV set, I could put a DVD in. I'm so used to using the old VCR, I'm still using it with the tape and so forth. So when I got it, it was given to me by a friend. When I got it, what happened was that when I received it, I would set the VCR to go off at 6:30, so I don't have to sit there and watch all those commercials, you know, to buy this medication, get this coffee, buy this and that. So it records itself. It stopped recording. So I'm trying to figure out. There are a number of different possible solutions. And Krishna, I was wondering, how do I solve this, Krishna? So I tried this, and I tried that, and I tried so many different things that I could try. Leaving it on channel 3, or not leaving it on channel 3, leaving it on channel 7, which was the news. I went through many different attempts to fix the problem. And I figured, after must have been 50 attempts, I couldn't fix it. It just when 6:30 came, it would not record. And even when I tried to record fresh, like right now, whatever was on, it stopped recording. I said, "Well, it must be the end of the set." And so I was determined, probably, that I hate to go buying new things. It means you have to learn all how to you have to go through all these instructions, you know, and figure them out and so forth. Or I have to call somebody in to help me. So then a flash comes into my mind. No. Nothing wrong with the set. It's the tape. So I'd been using this tape. I looked at the tape and I said, well, what's wrong with the tape? And now, you all know that, because we all had VCRs at one time. Now, there's a little hole on the front side of the tape. And if you puncture that hole, then what happens? You cannot tape over it. It stops you. It's an automatic protector. Okay? Some of you may have forgotten because, you know, those VCRs are like long ago and far away. But it has a little hole in it, and it stops you, and you cannot tape over it. So there was a hole there, and I had put some scotch tape over it so that the hole would not be visible, and that when it went inside, what would happen was that it would be treated as if that little piece which was there, which makes it straight and not like a well that goes in. But what happened as a result of usage, the cellophane tape started going in. It started pressing in and creating like a little hollow. Consequently, that stopped it from recording because it didn't want to record over what was there. But I could not figure that out for a few weeks. But then I put my finger in, maybe that's the answer. Because you don't want to jump to a conclusion. Maybe it's not. So many times I jump to conclusions. So I went and I got another tape, which completely flat. It had the little piece in it, which you can knock out so that you can protect what you have recorded. Put that in and tried it for did a 10-minute test, worked perfectly. Then did another test, worked perfectly. Then set it to go off at 6:30 every day, 3 days in a row. It went off, problem solved. I was ready to junk the VCR, but Krishna knew that it still worked. And the problem was that the tape. Now, I'm not an analytical, technical person. But I need the help of people who are technical persons. So Krishna just flashed it through my head, and then it got fixed immediately. I'm just giving you an example of how amazingly he can work. And I would have ended up buying, you know, probably for another $150 or something like that. Probably a combo, because I don't want to give up some of the VCR documentaries I have, and I wanted to keep them, so I would buy a combo DVD and VCR. That's just one example of how Krishna can help you. And it's I don't like to bother him for some of these things, but I sometimes I'm feeling in total helplessness of what to do. But he's my father, and he gives help. And that's not the real reason that I call upon him. I call upon him mainly to become a better devotee. That's the main point. Better devotee means serve him with more love in our heart. And there's no end to the amount of love that he can pour into you to give back out to him. Okay? So I'm sure you all have different experiences. Keep a watch over yourself. As you become more Krishna conscious, you'll see Krishna entering into so many areas of your life, things you could not understand, which suddenly become instantly understandable, which would normally you'd rack your brains for hours to try to figure it out, and suddenly the answer comes in. Krishna is amazing. He knows everything. So much that you almost become frightened that a person can know so much. But we don't even know a fraction of what Krishna knows. Think about it. You take a flower, how it's put together, the body, how it's put together, how a child grows from just a little sperm and an egg come together, and then you have the multiplication of cells, more cells, finally a little shape takes place like a little fish, and then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, then it grows 1 foot, 3 feet, 5 feet, 6 feet. How is this growth taking place? Who's doing it? Things don't grow by themselves. They grow by intelligence is behind it. It's growing in a very organized, very coordinated fashion. All the parts are working together. All the glands and the nervous system and the respiratory system, the circulatory system, everything is working together in such a way as to produce a good working body until you get sick, of course. And then, even then, the body can heal itself, but a computer can't. It crashes, you've got to get somebody to uncrash it, but not your body. Who can do that? What scientist can produce a human body that can fix itself, can produce a machine that can fix itself? It doesn't. Okay? So I think all of you maybe want to take some prasadam now. And thank you very much for being such attentive listeners. I hope I've answered your questions as well. Yeah. Thank you so much for being such attentive listeners. If I've committed any offenses by being too loud or being too strong in my speech or by maybe even ridiculing or acting condescendingly, I offer my obeisances to all of you and beg your forgiveness in case I have done anything like that. Who am I that I'm so knowledgeable and so Krishna conscious that I can't make mistakes? I make them also. So therefore, if I have, feel free to point them out to me. And if you don't want to, that's okay too. But whatever you want, just I beg your forgiveness for any offenses I've made. Thank you so much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Glories to your service. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Wow. You put that on tape.